We're still a couple of weeks away, I think, from a community board meeting.
Well, yeah, we've got one in 2 weeks' time, actually. Not this Wednesday coming, but the following Wednesday.
But there are some things from the last one that I might follow up on just to see if anything's happened or moved along or what's the story is. I know we were talking about Freedom Camping and have done at the last two community board meetings.
That's right. So and we finally adopted our consultation document on Tuesday. So that is now out for community consultation. So you might remember that we had a pre-engagement opportunity in the community to put in thoughts and ideas. The community board obviously did that, and I gave some suggestions for Raglan, which included the consideration of Stewart Street being turned from what we call a prohibited, so an area where freedom camping can't take place, to restricted, which means that people self-contained, certified, because there was actually a new part of the freedom camping law that has gone through on June the 6th that has changed the requirements for on-board toilet facilities.
So you can't have one of those mobile container things that
exactly
nobody
right.
actually
it
uses.
It has to be fixed, yeah. So it can't just be a potty or something like that. So that came into effect on the 6th of June. So it's quite good that our consultation is happening now after that's been enacted. So it gives us a little bit more teeth. But anyway, going back to Stewart Street, that for Raglan, for that area to become a restricted, so it's timed. I think it's from 7 p.m. to 8 a.m.
But so you can stay
off the top of my head.
You can stay overnight, and then you've got to move on. Basically,
that's exactly right, and you have to go. So it's not, you know, encroaching on the CBD or, in fact, residential. And the suggestion to include that is because there are the toilets that are at Joyce Petrol Park, and you know, oftentimes we hear the complaints of people, you know, pooing in places they shouldn't.
Yes.
And so, you know, putting them in places where there are toilet facilities. And I had also made the recommendation to staff to consider taking out James Street where the bowling club is.
So that currently or previously was listed as a what?
As an area for freedom camping.
That you could.
That actually hasn't been included because we had to, the staff have to follow a specific matrix, and the higher the points, the more likely it is that it'll get supported, and it was only deemed as in five. So unfortunately that part of James Street wasn't put in there, but obviously if there
but residents can
but residents
submit.
And also bowling club members can also can submit to this process, and also included is prohibited freedom camping outside the entrance to the wastewater treatment plant on Wainui Road, of all places, because the little entrance area to the treatment ponds there, you might, I'm not sure if you will see, but because I live out that way, oftentimes there are people freedom camping there.
Is that by the little building or the other entrance? Over
it's
there?
The other entrance the other where entrance. The sculpture is.
Okay.
So
yep.
That has been put in there as a place to be prohibited. So whether you agree or disagree or you would like to add to that, that is open as we speak. And also on Tuesday we adopted our cemeteries bylaw and also our trade waste and wastewater bylaw, which actually went out to consultation earlier this year. And so
what's anything about the cemeteries bylaw that we should know?
Not off the top of my head, actually, and same with the trade waste. The biggest for the trade waste and wastewater discussions that we had in council was more about the biggest sticking point there was the mortuary waste because, you know, river communities, that waste obviously goes through the water treatment plant, the wastewater treatment plant, and then gets discharged to the Awa. And you never think about that.
Do we want to get into this? So after someone dies...
And they and get washed and then...
Prepared for
yeah, prepared
the ceremony. But the undertakers do things inside the human body.
The waste from that, it's usually the water that's used in that and blood in that goes through the drainage and things like that. So,
okay, yeah. So
yeah,
stuff happens that we don't want to think about, but it happens.
It happens and it goes through our wastewater treatment plant to be treated to that standard for the discharge to the Waikato River. And obviously because we now have five Māori councillors, there was quite a bit of discussion around that. And we had submissions from undertakers, Māori and non-Māori. So that it was a very robust discussion, actually. So that was probably the biggest component.
Are they allowed to do this anymore or no?
Yep.
They are. Okay.
Yeah.
But to a certain standard?
Yeah. They have to do it to a certain – it's treated to a certain standard anyway. So that's both of those have been adopted as well.
Okay. And while we're on the subject of waste and all that stuff, you guys had a – when I say you guys, I think I mean the community board. Did you have a waste plant tour recently in recent times?
That was for councillors actually, which was great because we did that in my first term. We visited some of our – water reservoirs across the district and our wastewater treatment plants. But obviously when I first started in council, we were still considering, you know, the relationship with Watercare. Now we're in a partnership as the water services provider. So it was great to actually we went to Te Kauwhata, to the water reservoir where they do the treatment of the fresh water there. That was great because their reservoirs are actually the old wooden ones.
Right.
When I say old, they're not, you know, their lifespan isn't like 100 years old, but they've got – so that was quite awesome to see. And obviously it's a much bigger water treatment plant than the Raglan one and quite different. So – that was great to see. And then we went to the Te Kauwhata wastewater treatment plant where they are upgrading the treatment plant because through the the Tourism Infrastructure Fund or the Provincial Growth Fund? I think it was the TIF Fund, the Tourism Infrastructure Fund. We secured, I think it was about $28 million for the upgrade to the wastewater treatment plant at Te Kauwhata for a number of reasons, obviously, because they've got a large subdivision that's been put in there, Lakeside.
Tourism fund, though? How many tourists go to Te Kauwhata?
Mustn't have been the Tourism Infrastructure Fund. I'll have to double-check that. Sorry,
I thought
everyone.
They all came here.
Yeah, it did, and other communities. But no, it's not that. Anyway, I will remember. We've got secured funding for that, for the upgrade of that, and actually it's the membrane bioreactor, the MBR.
Oh, these fancy machines that really
will be the first in New Zealand.
Right.
Yeah.
You've got the fanciest of all the councils.
It's the fanciest, so they're still putting that in, and it's actually quite amazing to see.
I'm going to ring radio stations in other areas and tell them we've got the fanciest.
We will have the fanciest. The first one, the first membrane bioreactor of that type. So we went and visited there, and then we went to Meremere, which obviously Meremere is a very small community. But
do they have three water services?
They do.
Okay.
Their wastewater treatment plant it's actually quite beautiful.
Really?
Of all things. So we got to see.
I feel disbelieving.
No, it's brand spanking new.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a tiny version of what we then went to see at Pukekohe, which is the wastewater treatment, the massive wastewater treatment plant that's up there. But the Meremere one, in terms of understanding the process of wastewater treatment, this was fantastic to see in a smaller scale. So it goes from obviously the raw sewage and the wastewater, and we could see the settlement, the pipes coming in from the community, and then you could actually see each step of the process then going into where the wastewater person, Peter, then turned on the tap and washed his hands with the treated wastewater.
So this is when we say that we have treated wastewater going into our harbour on the ingoing tide, which is not ideal, but it's actually that level of...
We will get to that level of treatment because we haven't got the same membrane reactor as what the Meremere has.
But it's on its way.
It's on its way.
Okay.
So that was quite interesting. And it's, you know, people who work in that industry, the specialists, they're really enthusiastic about the poo.
but that's the benefit of the relationship with Watercare, is that they're specialists. You get that, which you can't get in every – it seems to not work in small councils to have that level of expertise.
You need an organisation
like Watercare to make it happen.
And seeing the examples of the different – because each community is bespoke, obviously, you know. So there are different requirements and you know, looking at the growth component of each community, what would be suitable. But, yeah, the guys were – very enthusiastic, and they've also got some staff who are young, who are working through the ranks, who have come through Waikato University in engineering, and who are specialising in three waters provisions. That was neat. So we've got Dearon, who's a lovely young Pacific Island Indian man who's working in our three waters space. He was working on the Better Off funding as well around that three waters. But then it was lovely to see when we met at Kaufata at the reserve. Sorry for rabbiting on. There was a young woman that was there, and they gave each other a big hug because they'd been to university together and they'd come from Fiji together.
Okay.
And then they've gone into different parts of waters provision, one for Watercare and one for Waikato District Council. So, you know, growing that skill and expertise within young people as well, those pathways.
Speaking about Watercare, with the three water system that's proposed, and I to this day I don't know how concrete that is, but we presumably would have to end that relationship with Watercare because some other body would be formed for our region. Would that be the case? Because we're going to end up in one of the 10 regions, which I presume is like based on the Waikato region area. Regional council area.
It's actually quite big. What we are advocating for is to be in Entity A, which would be with
the Auckland one.
Auckland and North, because we already have that relationship with Watercare, and it's working really well. So we've been advocating for that. So we've yet to hear.
Who decides? Does anybody even know who decides at this point in time? Is it so early in that government process?
Well, it's the DIA that's, you know, doing the three waters provision. So it would need to go to, I would imagine, through there and through central government. So we've been advocating to central government for us to be included in Entity A rather than Entity B.
Because I know people might not care that much about Watercare, but from what I've observed, this is one of the things that's working really well at council.
Well, do you remember when?
Retaining.
Yeah, do you remember when we were first talking about it, when the Cranley report came out in 2016 or 2015, whenever it was, when Waipa, Hamilton, and Waikato District Councils were looking at a shared services around the three waters, and there was a lot of worry that their assets would be taken over by someone else. And, you know, we would, the ratepayers or those that live in these communities that have that those services would lose out. But actually, for us, the opposite has happened because we've been able to significantly invest in the infrastructure and services of the provision for our three waters. And, I mean, you even have to look at our water main upgrades here, which comes at a huge cost. We've got the expertise, you know, to address issues. Don't get me wrong, it's not perfect.
I walk through that every day.
It's quite massive, eh? You know?
Yeah, and it's clearly a big undertaking. And the like, those are big pipes. They're like 20 centimetres, 30 centimetres wide. And
they are big
somehow
pipes.
They have to shove them underground. And they're not digging a trench all the way along the main road. That would be pretty invasive. But somehow they're shoving them through the ground.
Yeah, so it's working for us. And when you actually go, I wish we could take... And we were talking as we were driving, and Dearon was our driver, so we had the little minivan. And the enthusiasm about, you know, wouldn't it be great? We need to take our communities to visit these plants as well as our own plant here in Raglan. So looking at how perhaps, and we talked about this in my first term, about having a community open day where we could do a wastewater treatment plant tour and
a novel idea.
Water treatment plant tour as well. So then people can actually see rather than, speculation, which we often see,
yeah.
And then learning about what it actually requires to treat our wastewater. But anyway, yeah. There you go.
So some other things that we have a quick look at. The civil defence, has there been...
Yes, myself, UN... Dennis and Ross met last Friday
yes.
To finish the finishing, put the finishing touches on that. Dennis was just going to...
So this is a plan.
This is our community response plan.
Right.
Putting together, obviously... what if a tsunami happened? What if a earthquake happened? What flooding happened? So having what if the one lane car bridge because of an earthquake collapsed? All of those different considerations, looking at where the pinch points are, you know, who has what, where would we set up a control centre to help manage our own community response to whatever that matter yeah. might be.
Yeah.
So we were just putting in the last touches on where those areas are, where the possibility of a control centre might be, contact details, the Marais, and then the next step will be to get together with people who have got the capacity to do training, who wants to be involved. So, yeah,
okay.
is,
right.
So Dennis is spearheading that.
Okay. You were talking to me about, before we went on there, you said there's been some mayoral awards.
Yes, the Waikato District Council mayoral awards that we have done them in the past, but obviously the last 3 years with COVID, we haven't had the opportunity to do that. And Frank Turner has been a recipient of a mayoral award from Alan Sanson. So as councillor, as a local councillor to award, we get to nominate and it's for voluntary services within the community. I get to nominate a person. We get one nomination. And the yeah. community board also gets the opportunity to nominate a community member based on the criteria, which is obviously the service, voluntary service to the community, and that they live within the Waikato district. Of course, they would come from the Raglan ward,
yeah.
Whether it's Raglan Township or Ruapoge or Waitutina or Tiuku, you know. So if anyone out there has a burning desire for me to consider a person that they know within our communities of the Whangaroa Ward who would be a great recipient for the mayoral awards, that closes on the 11th of August. Please feel free to contact me if you have anyone in mind.
How often does that normally happen?
That's a yearly award, but obviously we haven't had that
for a while, yeah.
Yeah, for the whole of last term.
And that's not the same thing that Bob McLeod and Roger Gallagher got, was it? That was there was a volunteer award.
That's the I believe that's the volunteering Waikato award.
They got that for the whole area.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sign they were doing too much.
Yeah, yeah.
If you get that award, it's like, no, you've gone into
overdrive. That's pretty awesome, though, eh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they were fantastic.
And it's great for people who are doing stuff in the community selflessly to be recognised.
Yeah. The Tuku Recycling Centre, there's a lot of talk about the contract Extreme has there and whether they seem to need to do more cleanup and more daily visits than initially thought. And
my understanding is after Dennis and I met with Steve, the operations manager up at Extreme, that initially they've been providing the services there 5 times a week to empty that, but they were only contracted for 3.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Right, sorry. My understanding is that that's been resolved and now their contract covers the times that they do. But I can confirm. And they do a great service out there.
There's also discussion about whether having a service centre like that is the best idea or whether they should go to curbside collections for that little area.
That's exactly right, but we'd have to go out and consult.
Right, so we're still a ways off from making any decisions.
So, because we'd actually have to go out to those community members in those areas we'll have to do what that cost would be, all of those sorts of things, and does that mean then we take away that service that's currently there. So, you know, so there's quite a bit of work that needs to be done in that space. So okay. It's not as simple as going, we're going to do a curbside
Because it's a rural one
collection.
And that's not simple
yeah.
at all.
And
yeah.
so we need to, work closely, obviously, with Extreme Zero Waste because it's also about the cost of that service and the logistics of it. is it fortnightly? All of those sorts of things.
Okay. And something else we've been talking about is the internal bus service for Raglan. Have you had time to meet with, or is the regional council staff had time to get out
and
meet?
Dennis and Chris did that last week. Okay. I didn't go to that. So Dennis has sent out an email, which I still need to respond to. Sorry, Dennis. And yeah, so that's still a work in progress.
Okay. All right. Is there other stuff you've been working on?
Let me check my notes, Aaron. I'm very, very organised.
Very organised this morning.
Obviously, you know, being attending the IHUB and Destination Management Organisation Committee, Hui, looking at opportunities to work with the Raglan Holiday Park Camp and what that relationship might look like for the information hub. So that's quite exciting. Also, we had discussions at the DMO of looking at, you know, revitalisation of the water tower as a project and what that may look like. So watch that space. And I'm going to the Waikato Housing Initiative update today at Karapiro, so I'm really looking forward to what has come out of there and hearing back from that team. And that's, you know, around affordability and the Whangaroa Raglan Affordability Project, obviously through Fiona McNabb, has been feeding into that. And of course, RAP, we have to have another discussion where to from now, from here. And also just want to touch on a meeting a number of us had with Grace Mindoro, who is an ex-Raglan area student, around a mental health wellness community day for November.
Yeah.
You know, and the need to
the gumboot.
Yeah.
Day.
Yeah, and the need to support particularly our young people in our community with mental health,
yes.
You know, and given some of the circumstances that have happened recently, you know, so working on how we can support her and some other young people to have a mental health wellness day or week or month in November, and how we as a community board, myself as the councillor, but other key people in our community, and how we can work together to action that. And of course, I met with our Raglan Naturally Wellbeing Community Connector, Lara Sweetman, to progress our Ministry of Social Development accreditation for that role. And also we talked about mental health and wellness and what we can do under that umbrella in the coming months to support our community.
Now, was there something else? I've got a screen in front of me with a whole list of things on it, and I've lost track of the thing I was going to talk about. I think it can't have been very important. So we might leave.
Oh, yes, and our connectivity strategy as well. Is completed, as you can see. So putting that out to...
Oh, the road safety hui at Raglan Area School. That was the thing.
We haven't had one since the last time I talked about it.
Okay. All
yep.
right.
So, yep. So and school goes back next week, so hopefully we'll be able to reconvene and look at that. And I was just thinking, I hope the woman whose name has escaped me...
Who wanted to do the walking bus.
Yeah, I wonder where she's at with that.
Well, she came in for an interview, and we put a post out on Facebook because she doesn't do Facebook. There was some interest. There was interest from one of the teachers at school.
Yes, Angela Prain, I saw that. So yeah. I must follow up with that. Anyway, there you go. So, and of course, Matariki tomorrow, Aaron, and there's been lots happening in the community and lots more to happen. So
many events, more than I can count.
That's it. I think you said there were about 27 million in Raglan.
Yeah, approximately, yes.
Yep.
There's a list there.
Well, isn't that fantastic that our community and communities across across New Zealand have embraced Matariki?
Yeah, there's definitely lots. There's lots happening around Whangaroa over 2 weekends as well. There's so many we can't fit them all in.
Lots to look forward to, but also there is lots to reflect and acknowledge as well.
Yeah, so Sheila Chalkland was the lady who was
interested in the
walking bus.
Yep.
Seemed quite determined, so I'm sure you will hear from her again.
Yep. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
All right, Lisa, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Aaron. Happy Matariki, everyone. May you have a peaceful and abundant time.